This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
There are nearly 20 million military vets in the U.S., and each week we focus on their stories. This is CBS Eye on Veterans. Welcome back to CBS Eye on Veterans. I'm Navy vet Phil Briggs, reporting for ConnectingVets.com. And it's summertime. It's hot out. And I'll be honest, all I'm thinking about is mountains, lakes, and beers on a beach somewhere, which is why I'm really happy to be talking to today's guest, a Navy veteran. Michael Embrick is a writer, a traveler, a military researcher, and he's got a book out called March On, A Veteran's Travel Guide. And if you want to get out on the road this summer, you want to go see some things, I'm telling you, you have to have a copy of this book. And reading it just makes me want to get up out of this chair and go somewhere. So, let's first say hi to my fellow shipmate, Michael Embrick. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Phil. Thank you so much for having me on.
As we're going to dive into with this book, we're going to hear about travel through the veteran's eyes, and we're going to hear about a unique way to get around and go see some places with some uniquely veteran destinations. And it's not because of the discounts or the deals, but because like they represent things that I think a veteran would find interesting, but would be great to take the family to and just great to go see. And we're going to get into some great beers that you found around the country too, which is all part of vacationing. But first, tell me about your background, man. Tell me about where you were in the U.S. Navy.
So I was stationed on board the USS Theodore Roosevelt from 2000 to 2004. I served during Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom. So I joined the military pretty close right before 9/11. So kind of was thrust right into deployments shortly after I joined. So I joined right out of high school. I went back to college on the GI Bill after I got out, which is legislation I had the honor to work on. So that was pretty cool getting to use a bill that I worked on to get my undergraduate degree. Since then, I've been doing a lot of veteran advocacy. I've been the state commander of a large veteran service organization. I've worked for the VA. I've worked in the federal government. I worked on local and state government in the New Jersey Assembly, and also in Washington, D.C. on legislation for national legislation for veterans. So that's what I've been doing since military service.
Nice. Well, continuing to serve as so many veterans do, that's, not even news to me, because we hear that every week a veteran gets out and is still doing awesome things. You're a carrier guy like I was. What was your rate, or what was your what division did you work on?
So I joined as an undesignated airman. I was really into the whole aircraft thing when I joined. But a lot of people who join the military undesignated, you kind of get sent where, they need you. And security was becoming an emerging kind of need for the Navy after 9/11. So I did work a lot with the GMs on the 50 caliber machine guns, stuff like that. Side boys, saluting generals and top civilians who come on the boat. So kind of an all-purpose kind of guy who, moved around and did a lot of different things. But, if I could go back, I wouldn't change it. I learned so much, met so many great people. Had so many great, good, and bad experiences, but certainly made me a better person.
I was in on the John C. Stennis CVN 74, which was just, I think, just a couple ahead of you. Like, what was your, you were number 70?
71.
Yeah. Okay. So you were 71. I was 74. So I was just like two, three generations ahead of you. Yeah. It was awesome all the same. I loved sitting on the sponsons, watching the waves, watching. I loved laying on the fantail. Did you guys do that? Did you lay on the fantail of the ship and watch the jets fly over?
We did actually go take a big picture for Vanity Fair on the bow of the boat. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, we were down like one level from the flight deck on the fantail, or we were down at the basically the end of the hangar bay as you walked out to the back of the ship. And that was just such a cool spot to watch those jets roar right over your head. And it was awesome. And you were watching them leave full and come back empty, man. You were watching them putting warheads on foreheads, man. So that's awesome, dude. Good stuff. Not only do you get out and you work in policy and you work in government and you do some things like that, but you get a traveling Jones in you and you put together this book, man. And I love the fact that you're like a history buff and you're a traveler. And as I look through the table of contents, you can see how you basically kind of just carved out the country from northeast to the south, the Great Lakes and Plains, the Southwest and Rockies, West Coast. You even include Europe in this travel guide. And while I'd love to go through each and every one, because I know there's so many gems in here. Well, let's just start off with why you wrote the book from a veteran's angle instead of just writing a pure travel guide.
So I think what really drove me to write the book was a staggering number that's out there. And you hear it a lot, I'm sure everybody in the veterans community hears it a lot, but that an estimated 22 veterans take their own lives every day. As a policymaker, as a policy person, and as a veteran alone, I think it's just a number that it obviously shouldn't be that high, but I think it's going to take some thinking outside the box to kind of reach veterans, find out why they're unhappy, what kind of issues they have with PTSD or employment or family. It seems we always find that these issues are kind of all related, and how you can kind of break that cycle of getting out of the military, getting into a bad place, turning to drugs or alcohol, that affecting your personal life, whether it's your employment or your family life, and then that leading to this kind of vicious cycle of depression and drug abuse. The old ways, they're just not working anymore. They don't seem to be as effective as they used to be. So I think with a book like this, my main goal was really kind of just the simplest part of the book is just sometimes getting out of your basement, walking outside, feeling the sun on your face is the first step to breaking that cycle. And I figured if I could put a lot of places and show a lot of examples of other veterans doing just that, that it could kind of serve as not only a guide, but a roadmap on how to lead a happier and more productive life for veterans who are struggling. And I know so many.
And you're right. I mean, what's the VA do? What do so many doctors do? They prescribe pills. They, you know, here, take this to sleep, take this for anxiety, take this for stress. No, there's something about sunshine and God's green earth, just getting out and going to a place you've never been before and having a cup of coffee or a beer somewhere with people you've never met. And if you can have a guide like this, you can also sort of have a roadmap to kind of get you into places and spaces where you'll feel safe. So I'm so glad you decided to put all these things together. Tell me a little bit about your favorite veteran story that's in the book.
So there's a lot of good ones, but there's two that stand out to me. One is about, and I don't want to give away too much, my publisher will be angry with me, but one is about a group of Muslim Americans who fought off the British landing during the War of 1812. And the important thing about this is they were enslaved Muslim Americans, they took up arms with the plantation owner there. It's crazy to talk about now, but that's the way it was. And they fought off the British. The British were trying to make a major landing to disrupt sugar plantation production, and they fought them off. And it's an amazing story about Muslim American enslaved veterans, which is never talked about. You'd never find this story in a million years. And I had to look hard to find it, and a part of American history we should never forget. One of the lighter ones, less serious note, there was a professional wrestler who was so gigantic, he was able to join the army at 12 or 13. They thought he was a man. He ended up fighting in the Spanish-American War, and the last war he fought in was World War II.
So, no.
Yes. So, you know, he was able to join so young that he was, you know, by the time he was in his 50s, you know, World War II had rolled around, they needed people. So he joined again and fought World War II. Not in a heavy combat role, I'm sure, but, you know, he'd done enough deployments, you know, to serve five lifetimes.
That's awesome. In what regions of the country were those?
So the Muslim American slaves are North Carolina, and the wrestler was from the Midwest, Kansas, nice. I believe. Yeah.
All right. And since he mentioned North Carolina, I'll say the part of his book about axes and ales. The City Beer Tour in Raleigh, North Carolina. Sounds awesome. Founded by a paratrooper and a firefighter, they'll show you the best places to go in town on a fire truck. And Raleigh's also an easy drive from the great beaches of North Carolina. And since he mentioned the great state of Kansas, we'll talk later about why Fort Riley is a great place for vets, football, and fishing when CBS Eye on Veterans returns. Welcome back to CBS Eye on Veterans. I'm Navy veteran Phil Briggs. In this hour, we're talking travel. And since it's summertime, we'll pick back up with my interview with Navy veteran Michael Embrick, who wrote the book, March On, A Veteran's Travel Guide. New Orleans, Louisiana. I absolutely have always wanted to go there. And you've got a couple really cool gems that I found in the New Orleans thing. But first, talk to me about some of the military history there.
Yeah, so, sure. So, you know, New Orleans obviously was a part of the French colonial dynasty. And, you know, we bought it through the Louisiana Purchase. But a lot of French history stayed there, obviously, with, you know, Creole. And there's a lot of American military history there from the Civil War to the War of Independence. New Orleans is a huge shipping port during, you know, from revolutionary times on. Obviously, access to the Mississippi River was huge in supplying everything from the U.S. Navy with timber for their ships and, you know, beaver skins and stuff like that, that you kind of needed to dress back then. Other than that, the city has a really great military history, just supplying great veterans to the armed forces. You walk through New Orleans today and you kind of have those blue collar neighborhoods and those VFWs and American Legion halls are still there. You had vets who came back from World War II and opened up local pubs that became staples in those communities where people got married. They had their christenings, might have met their wife or, you know, their significant other there. So I think New Orleans, if you don't think of, you would think of New Orleans more of a party town, you know, Mardi Gras, that kind of thing. But there's a lot of military history there. Great museums. They have some Navy ships as well. So certainly something you want to do outside of Mardi Gras or within Mardi Gras, if that's your thing. But
yeah,
great, beautiful part of America.
Yeah. The one thing I'll note about, you know, having flipped through it, how do you pronounce it? Chalmette Battlefield?
I'm from New Jersey. So we might have to get a French person, but I think Chalmette might be the way to it.
Okay. I'll take it. Chalmette Battlefield. But the site of the historic battle of New Orleans, where General Andrew Jackson, Old Hickory, led a ragtag group of militiamen and freed slaves to defeat the British forces of 11,000. And they did it all from the banks of the Mississippi River. That's a pretty cool thing to go look at. And then you'd mentioned it before, how people came back and started businesses. And whether it was, you know, World War II era vets that came back, you cite a place called Grits, and it's a bar founded by a World War II veteran named Curvin Grits Jaldren. And he's called Grits because he was the only Southerner in his division when he was in World War II. And then more modern places like Nola Brewing. And after Hurricane Katrina, you know, devastated that, there was a Nola resident there, Kurt Coco, and he was a Navy veteran and he wanted to kind of help rebuild. So he, you know, put together, which became, I guess, after the rebuild there, the single and the first craft brewer within the city of New Orleans. And just a ton of great collections of craft beers. You can go up the street and go to another place called F&M Patio, another veteran-owned joint. I just loved how you paid special detail to these. And I wanted to kind of go down that lane a little further. What are some other good beers we could try around the country? And give me something maybe, I don't know, you got any coastal beers or like beach-type locations that you had a veteran-owned beer?
Yeah, so we have a place here in Forked River, New Jersey. Black Flag Brewing Company. They make some really, really good beers. In New Jersey, we call, you know, it Forked River down the shore. So they're kind of a shore, down the shore brewing company. They make some great IPAs. I've had some good ones everywhere from Huntsville, Alabama, to San Diego. There's a veteran, co-veteran brewer here in New York City called Talia Brewing. They make a really, really nice hazy IPA. I've been really into hazy IPAs lately, less than I'd like to be because of the calories and carbs, but certainly a few beers that I'm really feeling right now and kind of like my soundtrack of beers to the summer. Those three, I would say.
Nice. Share with me a little bit of your memories of Key West. I noticed that that's under the South as well. And not something I always think about with military history, but very cool nonetheless.
Yeah. So, I mean, Key West is certainly a significant geographical area during the wars, the early independence wars, the War of 1812, a key shipping city where a lot of sugar and other fruits and stuff that came through from the Caribbean was first stopped to get taxed to go to United States proper. So the Coast Guard has a very strong presence there. They still do to this day. A lot of great military spots that are there. The USS Maine tragedy that the USS Maine hit a mine, which sparked the Spanish-American War. All the victims of that Navy tragedy are buried in Key West. There's also a cemetery in Key West where a bunch of rescued slaves ended up being buried. They were shipping of slaves was illegal during the 1860s, and the U.S. Navy overtook a British ship with slaves, and they brought them to the United States. And back then, there was no way really to get people back. There was a war raging, so all those people stayed in Key West, and they lived lives there and died there, and they're still a big part of that community, and they're there. And that's a huge thing that the U.S. Navy did in Key West, and part of the reason why the Navy is still there today.
Right on. And always a shout out to our brothers in the Coast Guard too, because while the Navy gets all the credit for the bad warships, the Coasties, man, they run Florida and they do it well. Let's stay on the beach side. Let's jump to the other coast. And one of my favorite cities I've ever been to is San Diego, of course, Navy town. So, I mean, we love our Navy towns, but share with me just some thoughts that some gems you find in the book from the California coast, from San Diego to LA.
Well, firstly, I graduated at the top of my boot camp class, and I had a choice to be stationed in San Diego, and I passed it up, and I've been regretting it ever since. So certainly a place I like to go back to and imagine that I did spend 4 years there.
You went to Norfolk instead of San Diego?
I did not. Yes. I want to be closer to home.
Oh my gosh.
18 year old kid thing,
I'm sorry for your loss. Okay.
Well, I made up for it because I wrote about San Diego and I've been there a ton of times. So.
Yeah. Tell me all about it, man. It's a great, great town for some military history. What can I find in the book? A little gem.
All right. So yeah, there's a VFW hall there and they have a surf club. So a lot of vets, maybe vets that have some, issues getting out and meeting people, that's a place you can go and get out and meet people and do something really fun and learn to surf, and they'll teach you how to surf. Then you can go back to the VFW hall and talk about everything you learned. The number of the exact VFW escapes me, but it's San Diego's VFW, the surf club. It's the only place in the country that has one.
Oh, that is awesome. And yeah, you got vets. I mean, California residents, you go to the beaches. I mean, there's guys into their 60s and 70s and they're still paddling out because they grew up doing that. And how cool would that be?
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, San Diego obviously has a lot of great, military history. They do a great Fleet Week event there where the Navy comes in and takes over the town, which I'm sure you're familiar with. Some good veteran-owned businesses in San Diego. Obviously, a lot of people stay and make a life because it's so beautiful. Just an idyllic. It reminds me of Dingle, Ireland, just like the cliffs. And, the weather's obviously a lot different, but kind of that place you can go and be alone and think and swim and all that good stuff.
All right, let's go to the mountains next. Share with me some thoughts and reflections from Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Colorado Springs was something I certainly wanted to put in, not only because it was home of the Air Force Academy. I put those three places in for special destinations for football games that I've been to and that I really loved. And Colorado Springs is a great town. The Air Force Academy is there. There's a ton of stuff to do outdoors there. The Garden of God is just a huge hiking and swimming and fishing and hunting and mountain climbing area there in Colorado Springs. I mean, you could go there and experience every terrain that there is to experience in the United States. It's always very sunny there. It's just a really, really great place for veterans. It's a military town, but also this kind of outdoor wonderland where you can get lost. And it has great beers, right? You know, Coors. And there's, you know, there's some veterans there doing some great things with beer. There's a tour company that's owned by veterans where they take you to all the great breweries. It's called Cold Springs Beer Company, I believe. And I mean, it's a great stop. And if you're going to go there, go during Air Force Army time. Great game to see. You'll see all the flyovers. You see, you know, the Air Force cadets parachuting and doing all types of other training around, and airmen doing all kinds of cool stuff.
And we'll keep talking travel with Navy veteran Michael Embrick when CBS Eye on Veterans returns.
All right. You also have a cool story about a veterans group that fought the Nazis. And, you know, while I first didn't, you know, raise an eyebrow at that one, because I think, well, yeah, there's, you know, World War II veterans. I mean, they all fought Nazis. But you're saying there was a veterans group that actually went and fought as veterans, no longer in the military.
Yes, exactly. So they were part of the American Legion Paris Post 1, which is a historic American Legion post, the first one. Formed by a bunch of World War One veterans who decided to stay in Paris after the war, just due to the logistics of travel. And some of them had met, you know, French spouses and counterparts, so they stayed in France after the war. And they became Parisians, you know, basically, you know, every part of Paris life was part of their life. They kind of forgot their American lives, so they're kind of expats in that sense. But when the Nazis rolled into Paris, the post commander, a guy named George Aubry, decided to take up arms with his postmates, and they fought in the French resistance. They supplied intelligence to the Allies. The Nazis were chasing them all over France because they were a huge problem. And these guys, you know, this is one of the only stories that I could find of an actual veterans group, like a post, a VFW or American Legion post, that actually fought in a war as veterans and not as American soldiers and not as French soldiers. They fought as veterans, as a veterans group, and that was well accepted and expected of them. So I think that's a part of our collective history as veterans that we should never forget.
Wow, that's amazing. So they were just expat veterans living in Paris, sitting around, you know, drinking coffee, having a baguette, drinking some wine at, you know, 11 in the morning or whatever they do. And then it all breaks out and they're like, let's go get our gun on, boys. We're good at this.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
At that time, they would have been veterans of World War One.
Yeah.
Wow. You know who else comes to mind when you talk about veterans just sitting around, you know, the cafes and stuff when World War II breaks out and everything was? Ernest Hemingway was over there at that time as well. And while he didn't pick up a gun and fight, he was also a veteran. And I believe he served as an ambulance driver or something with France or something during World War One. But it didn't have a long career in the military like the gentleman you are speaking of, but that's wild to think that, you know, there were expats living over there that just had, you know, decided to jump up and jump in the fight.
Yeah. And I had to give Hemingway his due respect. But so I did mention him in the part about Paris. There's a story about Hemingway kind of busting into the Ritz Plaza Hotel bar after the war and saying to the bartender, you know, where are the Nazis? And the bartender said, you know, they left. And then they just all started drinking and partying, you know.
Welcome back to CBS Eye on Veterans. I'm Navy veteran Phil Briggs, and we're still talking summertime travel with Navy veteran Michael Embrick, who wrote the book March On, A Veteran's Travel Guide. Chicago. Good times can be found in Chicago, from baseball to the unique hot dog with the pickle down the side of it. I love all things Chicago. Talk to me a little bit about what you discovered there for veterans and Chicago from the veteran vantage point.
Sure. So Chicago's such a great city. Only if there was no winter there. You know, that's its only right. Detriment to being very happy there. Veteran Wise is a great VFW post with a very historic building right in the loop in downtown Chicago. It is the meeting hall where the veterans met, called the Great War Meeting Hall. It is an amazing architectural gem. They do a lot of stuff out of that building. I believe there's a history museum in there too. Certainly something to see. Just murals of veterans of World War One. Some of the best artwork you'll see regarding to veterans groups and veterans in general. Obviously, there's great sporting events. Like you said, the Chicago Dog is a classic, and it does live up to the hype. But Chicago's the hedgeway. Just such a wonderful city. Like you said, if you want to go to a Cubs game or a Bears game, or there's always something going on in Chicago. You know, there's a ton of military history, as it was an industrial town that built everything for the war effort during World War II. And then after the war, it had one of the largest booms. And was one of the largest cities in America at one time. So certainly something you don't want to overlook, Chicago.
Were there any good veteran beers in Chicago that you can think of off the top of your head?
Great Lakes Brewing Company. They're right outside Chicago, so they make a pretty good mean IPA.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Man, that summer I spent there, we went to it must have been half a dozen Cubs games. And my favorite part was the Cubs Sox series when there's fathers and sons with different hats, and at the end of the game you don't even really know who won because everyone's just got their arm over their buddy's shoulder and they're kind of staggering out of the stadium. And Wrigley Field, I mean, you're just going back in time when you're standing there looking at it. So
I guess another important point is, I don't know if you went to basic training at Great Lakes. I did, so definitely. Yeah. Spent some time as a young sailor in Chicago as well. So,
and so weird for everybody listening to think that the Navy, many of the sailors, a lot of us get our start right there in Illinois. I mean, yeah. Libertyville or whatever the hell it was, just north of Chicago. But we all start our sailing career in Chicago. Good stuff. You cover some real kind of sort of off the beaten path places I wouldn't think to put in a book about travel, but Kansas City. And then there's this one that just kind of piqued my interest, Manhattan, Kansas. Now, when we get into the Plain States, I've driven cross country several times, and I can appreciate the beauty of the endless fields and the endless farming and just how great the middle part of America is, from the small towns to the honky tonks to the good old boys and girls in the pickup trucks. I mean, it's everything a country music song's about. But what about Manhattan, Kansas was it specifically that you found so fascinating?
Sure. So obviously, Fort Riley's right outside Manhattan, so it's the biggest army base in the country. There's a lot of army history at Fort Riley and, in Kansas in general, and in particularly in Manhattan. K-State's also in Manhattan, so it's a really great college town, which a lot of people don't think of it as, but it really is. So it's kind of like where a great college town and great military town meet. There's a ton of fun things to do there. Obviously, you can get out. There's great rivers and great lakes and stuff like that there. The veteran community there is tight knit. A lot of people go to get stationed at Fort Riley and then they end up staying. So they also have a hands-on military museum there. The Army does. It's on base that civilians can go look at. So that's really cool. I believe the Army's flight simulation school is there, and they'll let civilians go in and look at that, which is really cool. Something you won't get anywhere else in the country. Certainly if you're, for military veterans, you might end up there. You might think there's not a lot to do, but there certainly is a lot to do in Manhattan, Kansas.
That's awesome. And then, like you'd mentioned, the lakes and stuff geographically, you could go with the kids, go to a museum, let them check out some really killer army aircraft, and then go fish on a lake in the afternoon, or, spend a little bit of time there near the base and then get outwards and then go find some awesome fishing guides. And there's camping and shooting sports. There's Milford Lake right next to Fort Riley. And there's Turtle Creek Lake just to the northeast. So many things to do to go get in touch with God's country out there. Texas would be really tough if we left them out of this. And I love Texas. I mean, you nailed some of my favorite cities right here. You got Houston and San Antonio in there. Pick one memory from Texas that I can find in this book.
Sure. I think San Antonio is a great town. I love San Antonio. I'm a huge San Antonio Spurs fan. So certainly a destination for me to go see some good basketball when the dynasties existed with Tim Duncan. But it's a great town for veterans. I mean, obviously, you have Fort Sam Houston right outside San Antonio. So there's a ton of Army stuff to do there. And it has one of the only public VFW posts. It's right on the banks of the river, downtown the Riverwalk in San Antonio. It's in a historic colonial mansion. And some of my best memories in San Antonio, just kind of sitting out there with civilians, kind of soaking it all in, watching time go by, watching people go by, and also hanging out at a great historic VFW bar at the same time.
That's great. And it's open to the public too, which is kind of fascinating. You've mentioned VFW posts a couple different times in this, and I know I speak for all the veteran service organizations when I say that they're great, great to go for veterans, whether it's an AMVETS or whether it's an American Legion, VFW the same. Do you find when you go to Texas, you run into more veterans per square foot? And it's just great because you can spark up conversations, whether you're at a patio bar or down by Riverwalk in San Antonio, or whether you're getting some barbecue. Do you find that the veteran really feels at home in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, Texas is a great state. They do so much for veterans. They have so many programs and job fairs and stuff like that. They have great colleges, great schools, great trade schools. So everywhere in Texas, you'll find veterans doing very good and prospering in life as they should after military service.
And they're accepting of you with that slight hint of a New Jersey, New York accent. You didn't find that they held a grudge or wanted you to wear a cowboy hat and slow your words down?
No, they get sick of seeing people from Texas. So they like when us Northerners come down and, you know, as long as we're not too obnoxious, they enjoy us.
And there's something about a Northeastern ball busta that is just, you know, kind of universally accepted no matter where you go, especially if you've, you know, having a beer on a patio somewhere.
Yeah. Thank you, Sopranos.
I don't know if they did you a service or a disservice, but yeah, you can't mistake a guy from New Jersey now when you hear that slight accent in here. We've overlooked so many cities that are in here. North Carolina is really well represented. You got, Boston, a city I used to work in, which I got to say, if you want to travel and hit a beach and some history in a weekend, oh my God, go to Boston and read the chapter on that in here. My state, Maryland, Baltimore made it. And thank you for bringing up L. Ballmer. Get yourself some crab cakes at Phillips and, you know, tons of good veteran-owned breweries down here as well. You mentioned them. Just so much from coast to coast, the Central Plains and beyond in Europe. The book is March On, A Veteran's Travel Guide by Navy veteran Michael Embrick. We could go all day. You got more of these coming out? Because I know you couldn't cover everything. You know, there's no Wyoming, there's no Montana in here, and there's all these great places to go. Will you do a follow-up to this?
Yeah, so we're actually working on that now, and I have to talk to my wife about making some research trips to the West Coast. I'd certainly like to get out to Washington State. Oregon, covers more of the Midwest, like you said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously there's a huge military presence in Asia that's not covered in the book. So there's certainly a lot to see there. Hawaii is another huge one that I'm sorry that we had to miss, but we had to make some tough decisions, but we will get to the rest at some point.
I feel so bad for your wife. Like, honey, where should we go? Should we go to Seattle? Should we go to Spokane, Hawaii? I've got these research trips. Like, it's got to be a tip to talk her into these, huh?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. So she loves traveling as much as I do. So really not much resistance there.
That's awesome. Well, I thank you for your work in public policy. I thank you for your work as a military researcher, but I am so glad that you got a travel in Jones and a gift at writing. The book is March On, A Veteran's Travel Guide, and you can get it everywhere you get books. And do you have a website?
Yeah. So it's vetstravelguide.com. You know, we have some cool free content on there, you know, some short lists, you know, and obviously if any veteran, you know, wants a copy of the book, you know, just, you know, our email's there, email us and we'll get you a copy.
All right. Hey, shipmate, I really appreciate it. It's a great read.
Thanks, Phil. Thank you so much. And I appreciate your time and thanks for your interest. I'm glad you like it.
All right, so that does it for this week's show. Thank you for listening. Now, we'd love to hear from you, so follow us on Twitter at IonVeterans, or you can reach me at PhilBriggsVet. I'm always down to get your hot takes and spicy memes, and I'd love to talk to you every week, so please like and subscribe. Hell, even give us a review of the show, because the comments and reviews really help us tailor the show to you. Again, I'm Phil Briggs, Navy veteran and reporter with ConnectingVets.com in Washington, D.C. And I look forward to talking to you again on another episode of CBS Audio's Eye on Veterans.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.